I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Jeff Capel. Jeff is an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but Jeff is here with us today in his role as a member of COAST to talk about their opposition to the proposed Hamilton County sales tax. And Jeff, maybe you can just start with why you are against that cultural commission's or cultural committee's recommendation for this sales tax.
Yes, thanks for having me. We are against this sales tax increase because it's unfair to Hamilton County citizens and businesses that the county is being asked to pay most of the cost to repair two buildings that are owned by the city of Cincinnati. We're being taxed $315 million for this. The city of Cincinnati is only being asked to pay $10 million under this plan. So basically, Hamilton County is putting in $31 for every single dollar that the city of Cincinnati is putting in. This plan has no user fee. So the 60% plus of visitors to Union Terminal from outside the county would not have to pay a dime to restore the buildings that they will be using, whereas Hamilton County citizens would have to shoulder most of the burden.
So, Jeff, the issue, though, I think, is that some people believe that it should just go on the ballot and let the voters make the decision. What do you say to that?
Well, COAST actually does not oppose placing a responsible and fair plan on the ballot, because as you may remember, we've been at the forefront of giving citizens the right to vote on major issues such as the jail tax, the trash tax, some transit issues, stopping red light cameras. All that happened because we collected signatures along with other groups to put it on the ballot and let citizens decide. So we're not against that eventually happening here, but it's got to be a fair and responsible plan. It does nobody any good if a very expensive plan and a plan that's not thoroughly vetted and well done is put on the ballot and passed, because we have to deal with it in that case, just like with the stadiums. We voted for it, but we still got to deal with it.
Well, Jeff, both you at COAST and the Hamilton County Tax Levy Review Committee, which I happen to be a member of, have suggested that the ownership of Union Terminal be turned over to an outside group. What do you believe this would accomplish?
Well, the best thing that this accomplishes for the taxpayers is by having an outside group run this project and be responsible for it, we don't have to worry about the cost overruns. So if there's cost overruns, it's that organization that has to worry about it and not Hamilton County. We already have a very strained budget, which has been cut about 30% over the past few years, and we're dealing with all the stadium fund overruns. We simply can't afford to deal with anymore.
We've been talking to Jeff Capel, representing COAST. Jeff is an economist. He's with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Later this week, we're going to be talking to Doug McDonald. And Doug is the CEO and the president of the Cincinnati Museum Center, who's going to also discuss his views on the tax. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Doug McDonald. Doug is the president and CEO of Cincinnati Museum Center. And Doug, you all have been in the news a little bit lately with this proposed Hamilton County sales tax. And maybe the first question I'd like to ask you about that is, why did you pair up with Music Hall? You've had proposals in the past to renovate the building. I think it's well known that there's a major renovation project that needs to take place there.
The Tax Review Committee asked us to convene a community-based task force of broad range of people in the community who would be willing to look at this. And the sense we had from the Tax Review Committee was it should be an independent look, not just all of our board members looking at the same information. So when we went out into the community to find independent people and said, we'd like you to look at this, they said, you know, Music Hall also has some challenges. They originally were anticipating a large gift from Louise Nippert. When Mrs. Nippert died, that money went away. And so all of a sudden, Music Hall, which had thought for a long time they could be privately funded, that wasn't an option. So when we went to the community and said, community people, well, we want you to do a Union Terminal. They said, well, what about Music Hall? And we said, well, study both of them. Look at both of them and find a solution. That's the task force's decision, was to make a recommendation that was comprehensive. I will say that both projects together allowed us to really have more people involved from a broader range of community, and also was really helpful in terms of the private sector fundraising. Everybody in fundraising, everybody says, well, I know you're going to ask me for a bunch of money, but they're going to ask me for money too. And therefore, they get real nervous about making a gift to one for fear of what that's going to do for the next. And in the 2012 report from the Tax Review Committee, they even recognized this in that report and said that at that time, we were trying to raise the money privately and noted that the Music Hall project, which had started at that point, was beginning to compete with the private sector funding. So it worked together, and it was the decision of the community to do that.
What would be the consequence if you weren't able to renovate Cincinnati Museum Center?
Cincinnati Museum Center is one of the great museums in this country, and it is one of the great readaptive uses of a historic train station in the entire nation, and the most successful. But what we are now is we are literally stuck. We have donors who are saying, well, what's your future? Had a foundation last year, a major foundation, say, you know, we're not sure where you're going to be in the future, and we're not sure how you can afford to go anywhere else, and we're not sure we want to invest in an organization that has an uncertain future. And until that building is repaired, and until we have a long perspective and knowing we can be there, our future is very uncertain. And it's not possible to build new exhibits, to do new things, and invest the millions of dollars that will require if the building's future is uncertain.
We've been talking to Doug McDonald, and Doug is the CEO and the president of the Cincinnati Museum Center. Doug, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your perspective. And we have talked to Jeff Capel during this same segment this week about this whole issue. Jeff represents Coast. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our topic today is, how do you determine if you're doing all the right things in your business to make it worth enough so that when you retire, you'll have enough to live on?
Yes, when you exit, the last thing you want to do is not have enough money from the sale of your business or gifting it to your children, transitioning to your employees, that's going to allow you to live the kind of life that you've imagined and dreamed of.
So what you have to do several years prior to the point in time that you want to sell the business is look at the business, see what the value of the business is, and then look at what makes up that value.
You know, it's really interesting. I think a lot of business owners think they know what the value of their business is because, you know, they're emotionally tied to the business. But I can guarantee you it's either higher than they think or lower than they think. Very few of them know what their business is really worth. So what you have to do, and it's just very important to understand from an objective standpoint what your business is worth. You need to go out and get someone, a true valuation expert, to help you with coming up with that number.
And then once you have a realistic value of your business, you need to look at the value drivers. Where does your business fall short, if anywhere? You know, does it need more sales, more diversified product base, more diversified customer base, better employees?
Yes, you need a plan, and you need a written plan with very specific objectives that you can measure. You know, we're CPAs. We like to measure stuff. So to me, unless it's written down, it's not really a plan. So how do you find what those value drivers are?
And really, some of that is comparing your business to similar businesses and see what areas are you good at, what areas are you lacking.
Do you have too few customers? Maybe you need to diversify your customer base a bit more, because guess what? A business is worth a lot less if it's only got one or two or three customers.
That's right. And any customer that's more than 10% of your business, as a rule of thumb, is too big of a customer. So you don't want to get rid of that customer. You just want to grow more so it becomes less than 10%.
And what about your management team? Generally, when someone's looking at buying your business, you're not going to be there. So who are the other key management individuals that you need to hire, if you don't have them today, to bring on the bus that will add value so that when it is time to sell, the buyer will feel confident that this business can continue without you.
And you need to make sure that you can keep those people once you do bring them on.
Yes. Incentive plans that are a win-win, that bring value to the company and achieve your objectives, as well as incentivizing the employee. There's compensation plans, what I call golden handcuffs, where these folks get vested over time as these objectives are achieved. So the key is take a look at where your business is now, what it's worth today. Then identify what you need to do, what action you need to take to get your business to where it needs to be so you can achieve your dreams and goals. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, what do they say about some of the best laid plans sometimes just don't work out too well? And I think a lot of times people who think they're making a wise money decision are really making a big mistake.
Well, that's right. For instance, when you're out shopping and somebody offers you a credit card that will give you some instant discount on items purchased that day, On the surface, that seems like a great financial decision to get that credit card.
Yes, but unfortunately, in some cases, that could actually harm your credit score if you do too much of that. So you have to be very careful about that, because a lower credit score might cost you a lot more money than that discount that you just earned by opening up that card.
You know, another common mistake, and I don't know if people think they're saving money, but when they roll over money from a retirement plan because they're changing jobs, or they simply take money out of their IRA to pay off debt instead of rolling it back into another qualified plan, that's really short-sighted, because in most cases they're going to pay a penalty as well as taxes. So the actual cost of that is about 50% for most people.
That's absolutely right. And the same thinking goes to people who want to pull money out of their investment accounts to pay off their home mortgage. That may not always be the best plan, because if you can get a home mortgage rate in today's rates, which 3.5% or so, even 4%, theoretically you could be earning more money having left your dollars invested. So you really have to think about that, because your mortgage is deductible, so you also get a reduction effectively for taxes.
Well, and a lot of people don't have money in investment accounts except in retirement accounts. And another mistake people sometimes make is taking money out of their retirement accounts to pay for their kids' college education.
Yes, you can always borrow for school, for education, but you cannot borrow for your retirement. I know it's really difficult these days. Education costs are going out of the roof.
I'm painfully aware of that.
But it's critical that you are able to save for your retirement.
And another mistake people make sometimes is being too risk averse, keeping all their assets, their money, in cash, which pays virtually nothing, and foregoing the returns that we've experienced in the stock market and even the bond markets in the last 5 years.
Yes, the issue is it's emotional, right? So people get emotionally involved. If people really think about what they're doing and take the emotion out of the conversation, which is really hard, then they can make better financial decisions. I think a lot of people were just panic-stricken when they saw their investments drop so far, so fast, and they've not recovered.
Well, and sometimes that's the real benefit of having a financial advisor who's familiar with your situation and who can talk you out of making rash decisions.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest again today is Jeff Capel. Jeff is an economist with the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and you're using that economics background to try to understand this Hamilton County sales tax proposal. And as a representative of Coast, you're opposed, at least in part, to this proposal. And in our previous interview, you compared this to the stadium sales tax of a few years ago that's still going on. How do you compare what happened then with those two stadiums to two not-for-profit museums or buildings?
Yeah, we have to learn from the mistakes that were made during the stadium debacle. For one, if sales tax revenues do not come in as expected, then you have a funding shortfall to start with, and that can easily happen because this is only a 9-year sales tax. So let's say a recession hits in year two of this, and the revenues come in far short of expected, and it takes another 5 or 6 years to recover just back to the original point, then that means you've gone most of the 9 years without collecting the money that you were supposed to collect. And then on the expenses front, you know, they're not just remodeling a kitchen here. You're talking about renovating a building that's 80 years old that was built with design flaws in the first place. They're not going to get in there and find things are better than expected. So it doesn't take too much imagination to see how revenues can be far short of what's expected and expenses too much.
You know, Jeff, this is a very emotional issue for so many people. And again, being a numbers guy like you are, I think that to the extent that people can understand what you're talking about is really, really important, because it is the numbers. And if the numbers don't make sense, and we're numbers people too, the numbers have to add up. And I guess I'm wondering from your perspective, what would be your suggestion to improve this plan?
Yeah, three major themes that I presented to the commissioners that would improve this plan is, number one, get Music Hall off this proposal and let's just focus on Union Terminal. The county has a big history with Union Terminal, but it does not with Music Hall. So let's get Music Hall out of this, cut costs nearly 40%, and make this more manageable. Number two is, let's have an outside group manage this project and take ownership of the Union Terminal after it's done. So that way, if there's construction overruns, the county will not be responsible for them. And then number three is we need to make the owners, the users, and the backers pay their fair share. The city of Cincinnati owns these buildings. They need to pay more than 3% of the cost of this. We need a user fee so that people who use these buildings are the first ones to pay to renovate them and not the taxpayer.
Taxpayers should not always be the go-to people to get the taxes, right? In my mind, taxes should be the money that comes in last.
Exactly, and county commissioners have said exactly that, that Hamilton County tax dollars should be the last ones in, and under the proposals that we have given them, that would happen under our revised plan.
Jeff, one question I hear is this task force that was put together to come up with this proposal was made up of a blue chip committee of people, you know, respected business and community leaders that spent 7 or 8 months on this. How can you question what they came up with?
What we want to do first is question the plan and not them personally. These are very accomplished leaders, so they can look at this and give us good information to work off of. But at that point, we have to be able to evaluate the plan. Let's remember that all the experts and the business leaders told us to go ahead with a stadium plan. We could build two stadiums for $500 million, they told us. It was a former Procter & Gamble CEO that got us into the Freedom Center. How has that worked out?
So what you're really saying, if I'm hearing this right, is it's not that you're completely opposed to the sales tax to help with the buildings. It's just that you want to slow the process down so that people can evaluate the numbers more.
We definitely need to vet the numbers, and Coast does not oppose putting a fair and responsible plan on the ballot to let the voters decide, but we're not anywhere close to that yet.
We've been talking to Jeff Capel, representing Coast. Jeff is an economist. He's with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We're going to be talking to Doug McDonald, and Doug is the CEO and the president of the Cincinnati Museum Center, later on this week, right here on this segment. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Doug McDonald. Doug is the president and CEO of the Cincinnati Museum Center. And Doug, I know we're here today to talk about the sales tax that's proposed. I think a lot of people listening do not even question the museum center and the value that it brings to our community. I personally love the museum center. I've taken my children there. I think the real issue is the dollars involved and the magnitude of the dollars to repair that building. And I think we all know dollars are a scarce resource, so you have to pick and choose as a community. What do you say to people who challenge whether or not that is a good use of taxpayer dollars, and why are taxpayer dollars really the first dollars in?
Well, I don't think the taxpayers' first dollars in, because we've raised $40 million in the private sector, and they've actually signed pledges, and so far the government hasn't signed any commitment to do anything. So I would first off say they're not the first dollars in. The task force identified over $115 million of funding that can come into this proposal, which also are identified. So certainly taxpayer dollars are the last dollars in.
What is the total taxpayer dollar amount that would be needed for this?
About $225 million is necessary for the taxpayers on top of that. But that includes all bond interest and mortgage interest all the way through the duration of these issues. So that's not the cost of the project.
Well, and I know you had a blue ribbon task force that's really studied this issue, really wonderful leaders, very intelligent people who's been taking a look at this. And I guess the question that I've also heard is, why now? I think so many people are so concerned about the sales tax with the stadiums.
First off, there are literally no similarities to the stadium proposal. The stadium proposal was a tax which was approved before there was a plan. This is a plan which is in place before we're asking for a tax. Enormously different. The stadium had no sunset provision. This has a sunset provision that absolutely goes off. There's no similarities. That's political opportunism and not grounded in any fact basis. Somebody tells me this is a rush. I say, in 2003, a plan was developed to start on this process. In 2006, a master plan was completed in the county. In 2009, the county reviewed the master plan. In 2009, the county hired an independent assessment of the project and evaluated that through the Tax Letter Review Committee. The Tax Letter Review Committee in 2009 said, Hamilton County needs to address this and needs to come up with a capital plan to fund all these things. In 2012, we went back to the Tax Review Committee and the county and asked them to address the issue. In 2013, when this was being reviewed again by the Tax Review Committee and the county, we asked to have this addressed, and they asked to have an independent task force assigned in November of 2013, which we impaneled as quickly as one could in December. They've studied this for months, and they've studied the study of the original master plan. They've independently studied the independent study paid for by Hamilton County. And then now there's another study the Tax Review Committee is doing to validate the costs of the independent study, which was done over the last 8 months. So we are now having an independent study of the independent study of the independent study, all paid for by Hamilton County taxpayers, all but one. This is not a rush.
So what's the harm of waiting till May?
Wait till May, have interest rates go up at 1%. And if you look at what's happening in Wall Street, interest rate exposures, and the Fed just issued a new letter saying that they're going to take the thumb off interest rates. If interest rates go up at 1%, and the cost of this will go up by 6.5% for Union Terminal 1 year, the increased cost of the project and the cost of the interest rate is a $55 million additional expense to Hamilton County taxpayers. There is not going to be $55 million of new revenues or of savings found in this project between now and spring, but that is the possible cost of an interest rate increase.
Why don't you have a user fee increase in there?
You know, we could do a user fee, and we're certainly talking about that. What I brought to you here is 160 pages. This 160 pages represents 7,508 ticket classifications for Cincinnati Museum Center since October of last year. And our users pay every day when they pay admission. And we can increase that when the building's done. I can't increase it now. It's a reasonable thing. We will do something there, but it's a very complicated process.
We've been talking to Doug McDonald, and Doug is the CEO and the president of the Cincinnati Museum Center. Doug, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your perspective. And we have talked to Jeff Capel during this same segment this week about this whole issue. Jeff represents Coast. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Borges. Matt is the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party, and you have to be thrilled that the convention, the Republican convention, is going to be here in Ohio.
No question. Hi, Crystal. Hi, Tom. How are you? Great to see you.
Good to see you too, Matt.
We are absolutely thrilled about the announcement that was made about the Republican National Convention coming to Ohio. And it's been an incredible process to witness, you know, firsthand and go through. And we've landed the first political convention for the state of Ohio since 1936. So really a remarkable, an historic day for Ohio. And these next couple of years are going to be a lot of work, but a lot of welcome work. And it'll be a lot of fun.
And it was really a bipartisan effort to do this, wasn't it? I mean, you had the mayor of Cleveland,
yes,
actively
who's
involved
a Democrat.
In this.
Yes, Frank Jackson. We could not give enough credit to the mayor up there, front and center. Actually, the very first meeting that we had to discuss the possibility of responding to the Republican National Committee's RFP was in Mayor Jackson's office. And he called together a number of us and said, you know, he wants to go after this and asked, you know, show us what we need to do. What's it going to take? Really a remarkable effort put together by the folks up in Cleveland that ultimately led to that decision being made and that recommendation being made that has really turned it into a whirlwind for us here.
Well, it's not only a substantial economic impact to have all those visitors come into the city, but it also allows Cleveland and Ohio to showcase themselves in front of the entire nation and really probably the whole world
yes.
for a few days.
No, there's no question about that. And, you know, Cleveland for years, for decades, has fought a reputation, the so-called mistake on the lake, the butt of many jokes on
we hear a few of those down here in this part of the state.
Yeah, and we heard from the site selection committee members themselves how impressed they were. You know, in some ways, Cleveland had the advantage, perhaps, of low expectations, because when people come there and see it for themselves, see how much, you know, the city has turned around and how much development is downtown and the facilities that they have and the culture, the neighborhoods, the, you know, what's available to showcase. It really is a remarkable place. And so we couldn't have been more pleased that selection ultimately came down. And it had come down between us and Dallas, between Cleveland and Dallas. And initially we'd had three Ohio cities that were involved in the process. But as that got winnowed down to the final two, we were in, it was Cleveland and Dallas as the finalists, and ultimately we were selected.
And when is the convention?
Well, they're negotiating two different contracts right now, and we will either have a start date in late June of 2016 or perhaps in mid-July of 2016.
We've been talking to Matt Borges. Matt's the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Borges. Matt is the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party. And Matt, you have to be so thrilled with the announcement that the 2016 Republican National Convention is going to be in our state, in Ohio, in Cleveland. And the mayor of Cleveland has to be quite thrilled, too, with the economic injection they're going to get for that city. How much is that?
Absolutely. An historic day and an important day for Cleveland. And yes, the economic impact is a significant one for the community that ultimately landed the convention. There is a significant investment that goes along with it from the local community. But there are estimates from anywhere from $250 to $400 million that can be infused into the local economy. They saw numbers similar to that, on the low end of that, but similar to that in Tampa in 2012. And there is great interest, obviously, in bringing this convention. 50,000 people descend upon your city to attend the convention or the various events that surround the convention. I've been to the last six Republican conventions all over the country, and they are remarkable events unlike any other. And as everyone knows, they're not just events of regional or national import; they're international events.
Sure.
And so the focus of the world for several days is going to be on Cleveland, Ohio, and that really is something to behold.
Well, that's great for Cleveland. We're a little disappointed in Cincinnati because we were in the early stages being considered for the convention. Mm-hmm. What's the big difference that made us get knocked out? Is it the fact that we don't easily accommodate a convention of that size with our current facilities?
Well, actually, Cincinnati could host a convention of that size without any question. There's plenty of hotel space. They certainly met the minimum standards that were required to submit the response to the RFP. The selection committee did their visits and made an assessment on a number of different issues, actually eliminated Columbus early. So we actually had three Ohio cities involved in this early on. And so from the state party's perspective, we can't pick our favorite child. We were sort of for Ohio generally. But since only eight cities nationally submitted, we had three out of eight. We had a pretty good, almost a 50% chance there of landing it somehow. And ultimately, one did win. So through the process, there were various issues that were addressed, and that led to the finalists being Cleveland and Dallas. Cleveland ultimately won, and we're bringing the convention to Ohio. We couldn't be happier.
That's exactly right. That's wonderful that Ohio gets to shine in a couple of years. So, Matt, thank you so much for being our guest, and thank you for listening to BusinessWise. We've been talking to Matt Borges. Matt's the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Carl Dostal. Carl is a partner at Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. And Carl, I know part of your practice consists of, in essence, being an outsourced CFO for medical practices. You've developed a specialty in that area. Why does a medical practice need an outsourced CFO?
Well, there are a number of reasons why a medical practice would need an outsourced CFO. And the primary reason generally is that the doctors or the owners are not receiving financial statements, or they're getting financial statements, but no one can tell them what they mean. They understand cash in and cash out, but there's not someone at their office that can explain what they did today versus what they did last month versus what they did last year, or how much are they making, what's their overhead. There's just some upper level questions that they need the answers to.
Well, and in my experience, most medical professionals want to focus on medicine, not business, but really they do have a business, their practice that they're running. How do you help them start interpreting those financial statements so that they can make their business better?
Well, there's no question that doctors want to be doctors, but at the end of the day, it is a business, and it's to their best benefit that they're a profitable business. And one of the first things that we look at is we start looking at comparing data. So we're looking at not only current month, we're looking at previous month, previous year, but at the same time, we're also trying to figure out what's going to happen in the future. So we want to project, we want to do projections, we want to do budgets, and then we want to compare to actual results.
Do you also compare them to similar practices?
Yeah, and one of the benefits of having a practice like mine is that I can kind of cross-train or cross-reference multiple practices.
And then do you help them establish goals so that they can get to where they want to be financially?
Yeah, and that will relate to each individual doctor, but they all have certain things that they want to accomplish, whether it's to retire in 10 years or they want to reduce their fixed overhead ratio by a certain percentage. So we adapt a program to meet their goals.
Carl, if listeners want more information, where's the best way to contact you?
My direct line is 513-768-6782, or my email address is kdostal@cfscpa.com, or certainly you can visit our website at www.cfscpa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Carl Dostal. Carl is a partner at Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens. And Carl, part of your practice consists of being a CFO, an outsourced CFO for medical practices. And I know we've talked about this. Some people think outsourced CFO, that's somebody in India or some other country that's doing work at night when the business is closed. That's not really how you do your job, is it?
No. What I have found that it's better to immerse myself at the client, because that's exactly what you need to see what happens on a day-to-day basis. You need to see what happens month to month. You need to be working with the people that are putting all this information together, because that's how you really learn what's going on. Because at the end of the day, the owners, the doctors, whoever it may be, are going to ask me those questions, and I need to know those answers. So I have found that it's best that I'm physically on site. It could be a couple hours a week. It could be a couple days a month. There's all different types of programs that we apply to, just depending on whatever the client's needs are.
And usually those needs fall in the arena of planning, financially oriented, but sometimes just business oriented. For instance, helping them determine where's the best place to borrow money, or how to arrange their bank debt or their insurance.
A lot of the analysis is financial, but there are certain other aspects that are not financial. Recruiting comes into play when we're dealing with doctor's office. Developing a compensation package, you know, whether it's based on overhead or number of patients or cash receipts. We can look at banking and lines of credit needs. Sometimes, unfortunately, there's employee issues that you have to get involved with on the human resource side. So a CFO stands for Chief Financial Officer, but basically it's a business manager that they're looking for and trying to get that upper level help.
Well, I suspect that besides personnel, which is, I'm sure, a substantial cost for most medical practices, technology is probably a pretty high cost as well. How do you keep up with technology in the medical practices?
I have multiple practices that are on multiple different types of technology, and on occasion I will accompany my clients to their technology conferences, which helps a lot. Now, all these packages are different, but at the end of the day, it's all capturing the same type of patient data and financial data, and then translating that into financial statements and meaningful information to the doctors and the owners.
If you had just one piece of advice to give a medical practice that doesn't have maybe a good CFO, what would you tell them to look at?
Well, to me, the past is important, but it's going to be what's going to be happening 3 months from now or 6 months from now. To me, that's the most important thing, except for the amount of cash that you have in place today.
Yes, it's always important that you have enough cash. Carl, if listeners want more information, where's the best way to contact you?
My direct line is 513-768-6782, or my email address is kdostal@cfscpa.com, or certainly you can visit our website at www.cfscpa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.